Blog Talk Radio.
Outline about yourself and about this
exoconsciousness and about the humans.
Yes, I'd love to do that. Just to begin, at the beginning, I have been an ET experiencer from a very early age, about three years old that I can first remember. So I'm one of those group, actually there's quite a few of us, that have been long life experiencers with the ET world. And we can, I mean, that's gone through some different phases in my life, depending on my development and depending on my circumstances. But I grew up very aware of the extraterrestrial presence and of my relationship with it. And then I suppose the biggest moment in terms of defining exoconsciousness came when I moved to Phoenix, Arizona in 1992. And at that time, I didn't know it, but as my exoconscious life would have it, I moved to a very small town with my family called Fountain Hills, Arizona, and which was actually the home of one of the first ET experiencer groups in the nation. So it was run by Dr. Ruth Hover. She'd been running this ET experiencer group for quite a long time. She'd worked with, I don't know if you know these names, Leo Sprinkle, with John Mack, Barbara Lamb, and had been very, very active with that group, and had been part of John Mack's Peer, P-E-E-R, group out of Harvard. And so I joined her ET experiencer group. That was the first time as an adult that I was able to be among fellow experiencers, to talk about what I experienced, to listen to what they experienced, find those points of relationship where we have a lot of the same experiences. And then I started reading Dr. Hover's library. She had one of these amazing libraries, like three books deep sometimes. So you had to go pull out the first row and then the second row, and then the books would be back in the third row. That's how massive her library was. And I started learning about just what people were beginning to write in the 80s and the 90s about the extraterrestrial presence, about different forms of energy, about alternative history, alternative archaeology. And so from there, I began to teach a course at a college in Scottsdale, Arizona. It was called ET Reality. It was one of the first, I was among some of the first people that offered an actual course here in the United States on UFOs and the extraterrestrial presence. And then one day I was a single mom. I was raising my children. I was working very hard just to keep one foot in front of the other. And I had been doing all this research, had all this literally living experience with ETs. And one morning I woke up before I had to go to work. My alarm went off, and I just kind of, you know how you turn your alarm off and you sort of lay back down in bed and think, okay, I'll just lie here for a couple more minutes before the kids get up, before, you know, the whole routine of the morning starts in. And just from, I remember that sensation that all of a sudden I got this word, exoconsciousness, that came to me. And I knew at that point that was to be my life's work, that I was supposed to bring this concept into the world and talk about the consciousness aspect of the ET presence. And then I think in 2008 I published Exoconsciousness, Your 21st Century Mind, and it's just grown from there. And today I live in Washington, D.C., and have, you know, taken my work to yet another level. So it's very, very exciting, and there's lots of things happening in this field right now. So that's always good. At some points, it had been kind of stagnant when you were in the ufology field, but today it's quite active and vital, and A lot of people are awakening to a new part of who they are.
I think they are as well, because wherever you go around the world now, there's people being abducted many a times all over the place. And I'm glad you've got these groups going now, because a lot of people probably have been abducted or whatever, what's happened to them. They've come back and they've lived their life on their own because people think, oh, that's a load of rubbish, that is. You know, you can't have been. You've dreamt it. So I'm glad you've opened these, a lot of people's eyes into all this. And it does help people to regain the consciousness and find out more about themselves and more about ETs.
Right. It's a very... I've worked for a long time. When I first started out, I was working more in the field of ufology. I lived in Phoenix during the Phoenix Lights event, and
oh, yeah.
Very close friends with Lynn Kitai and a whole wonderful group of community there around the Phoenix Lights. I go back to Phoenix quite a bit. Some of my children still live there, and my grandchildren. So I have strong ties to Phoenix. And then I began to be very active in the exopolitics community with Michael Sala and that group, the Exopolitics Institute. I'm still on their board and, you know, was very active with them. But I always felt like at some point there was going to be a time when consciousness was going to be the issue that was addressed in terms of disclosure. That it's interesting how we use the word unidentified flying object for UFO when I look at exoconsciousness as we are what's unidentified, that part of ourselves that is ET, that part of ourselves that relates to the extraterrestrial presence. That's really what's been unidentified. And that's where we need to begin to spend time and learn about who we are. I mean, I think it's very important that the United States government begins like the government in the UK to have, you know, disclosure of their, you know, their military files, their classified files. It's all very important that politicians address this issue. I've worked on that issue with Steve Bassett, a good friend of mine, for many years. And I would also add that the next phase, I think, is going to be about individual humans waking up to who they are as ET.
Yes. Yes. That sounds so interesting as well. Yeah, how humans identify the forming around ET contacts. Yeah, can you remember when you first came in contact with ETs then?
I remember back my early contact experience. I am not a military abductee or a MELAB, as we call them in the field, or a MILAB, however you say it. But I do have a lot of friends who came out of either military backgrounds or, you know, married into the military and began having contact experiences. But for me, I was not part of that world, and my ET experiences just started right away when I was a child. I remember being taken on board craft. I remember being educated. I oftentimes still to this day have downloads of information, which maybe is a download of information, and maybe it's just me recalling that information. But sometimes it does definitely feel like a download.
Yeah,
I remember...
That's what I was going to say, Rebecca. I think it's more like a download. What you're getting is to help other people who are down here at the moment.
Right, right. So, I don't know. I called my time as a child, I called that Star School. You know, I felt like I came into Earth and I went right into Star School, and had that ongoing relationship to today. I have ongoing relationships. I have ongoing ET contact, and I have it as a human, but I also have it as an exoconscious human that's aware that part of my identity is ET.
Yes. And do you feel any difference in yourself when you come to that point, when you feel as though you're an ET?
I think when I first started working on the whole concept of exoconsciousness, and I was just trying to be academic and scientific and kind of keep it at arm's length. And then there came a time, I remember very clearly, when I just felt like, you know, Becky, enough already. This is silly. You can stop convincing yourself. You can stop trying to convince other people. This is your reality. This is your identity. This is your lived experience. And there was a very definitive, I suppose you could call it, like in the quantum world, a collapse where I just, you know, gave in and said, this is who I am. And ever since then, my life has actually gotten a lot easier because I'm not fighting it so much. I'm not, you know, embarrassed by it. I'm not trying to, explain myself to other people. But yet, you know, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I have a big family, I'm a grandmother, I have a very grounded, normal life, and I try very hard to integrate my extraterrestrial identity into being on Earth, because this is my home. This is my home, this life.
Yes. That's true. Yeah, because... You, it's who you are, what makes it. And I can see where you're coming from, and I'm glad you've accepted everything. And that's why who you are today, you're a better person for yourself as well. And I can see that there's going to be lots of new things around you. And I hope when Hillary gets in, she opens this disclosure.
Yes, I think this has been in the works for a long time. I don't know if your audience is familiar with the whole Rockefeller Initiative here in America.
Yes, some of us are, yes. Anyway.
Yes, yeah. That's been unfolding since, I think, probably, I know, the early 90s, with Bill Clinton's administration, with Lawrence Rockefeller. I mean, it had a lot of serious money behind it, and there was a big push to reveal this. If your audience has a chance, I would definitely go on Steve Bass's website. He's taken Grant Cameron, the Canadian researcher Grant Cameron. He's taken Grant's work and put up a lot of the background and the history of the Rockefeller Initiative and who the main players were, what they wanted. So I think this has been in the works for a long time. This isn't just a sudden kind of unfolding. This is very much, I think, something that our government has, quite frankly, cooperated in over the years. And it's not coming as a surprise.
Yeah. I'm just hoping it will come out eventually, but I'm sure it will be a few more years yet before it does come out, maybe 2020. But I think once it comes out, people will adjust to it. Everybody knows about UFOs. People talk about UFOs now, like years ago.
Right.
They didn't talk a lot about it, but people do talk about it now as well.
I also think that the information that is coming out in terms of, you know, Hillary Clinton, the Rockefeller Initiative, I mean, whoever is elected president, I don't know. I haven't read the tea leaves on that. But whoever is going to be president, I think there's going to be, you know, the push is already underway that the powers that be have agreed that they are going to release a certain level of information. You know, I live in Washington, D.C. I kind of see how information is filtered, who filters it, you know, how much is really disclosed, quote unquote. So the exopolitics movement was really founded on the principle of national security, that the ET presence is here, it could be a threat, It's something that we need to deal with on a national security basis. And, you know, I think that's real to some people, especially, you know, intelligence, military, segment of the population. But for me and the Institute of Exoconsciousness, it's really not about national security. That's not even on our radar at this point. Our purpose is more to be about the issue of identity, the issue of human identity, and how that is being shaped as we move into space, as we become aware of the ET presence. It's really not about a fear-based national security kind of initiative. It's more about just a human initiative. This is who we are as humans.
I'm going to ask you, what is this distinction between abduction and exoconsciousness?
Well, I think an abduction is a form of contact. It's abduction was a term that was coined by, I think, Bud Hopkins or John Mack. Bud Hopkins brought his clients to John Mack at Harvard, and Bud Hopkins talked a lot about in the early days of that people were, quote, abducted, as in taken against their will. And that's kind of, that's gone into today, into the work of people like David Jacobs, still talks about abduction. But I think in the history, John Mack was already, prior to his death, I think he was moving away from terms like abduction. And talking more about the fact that as people began to examine what had happened to them, they saw it more as something where a part of them had always been involved in the fact that this was occurring, that they had some kind of a spiritual or an identity link with the extraterrestrial that came and had the contact with them. I know several people that work with John Mack years ago, and they've all come to this. I think what happened, though, and I think the reason that the word abduction was used was because it was so strange and so traumatic to those people that oftentimes they were adults or they were young adults, and it's something that was totally out of their definition of reality, this whole visitation. And then that was abduction, I think, was mixed up with the whole military role with abductees that, you know, no one can say for certain, but that seems like a high probability that the United States military had an abduction program, either by themselves or in cooperation with some ET race. That was a very terrifying thing. And so today, I think most people who have contact, I know people that I talk to in experiencer groups, they refer more to themselves as ET experiencers, as contactees, where I think things have shifted very dramatically in using that terminology, because abduction denotes being a victim. Abduction denotes being kidnapped and traumatized. I think being a contactee or being exoconscious or referring to yourself as an ET experiencer, which is what I do usually, I think that denotes that I am participating in this encounter, that I am of my free will and with my creativity and with all the potentials within me as a human, that I am participating in this interaction.
Yeah. Excuse me a minute. What are some fundamentals of UFO sightings and exoconsciousness?
Fundamentals of exoconsciousness?
Yes.
Well, the primary fundamental of exoconsciousness is that all humans have the innate ability to connect and communicate with extraterrestrials. And I mean all humans. One of the things that occurred early on in the contactee world, or the world of contactees, is that people started to see themselves as special. People started to talk about themselves as chosen and kind of set apart in this role of being a contactee. Maybe they were told that, and then maybe that was true. And I think in those early years, I think that was one of the things that sort of sustained that living knowledge about contact. But then today, I think things have dramatically changed to the point where this is really about who we are as humans. I call humans today, I call exoconscious humans, that we are all able to begin this ability to see ourselves as one with the ET presence and can choose out of our own free will how we either relate or don't relate to this presence. So I think that's probably the main pillar of exoconsciousness today. And in the future, that said, it may change to, you know, something even deeper within humans as we begin to gain that knowledge. And so the ability to connect and communicate with extraterrestrials also denotes the fact that humans have a very high psychic ability, that we can telepathically communicate, that we can heal ourselves, that we have multidimensional minds, that we have a lot of different abilities, like being a medium, kinesthetics, bending spoons. We have high psychic powers that we have really not used to their fullest extent. And one of the things that I'm working on right now is I'm writing a book called The Transhuman Meets the Exoconscious Human. And I'm talking about what's going to happen with our psychic ability when we as a human civilization are implanted or connected to some kind of hive mind brain, or you know, our world begins to be one of data, just nothing but data as information. You know, what happens to humans in that respect? And the big question is, as that is happening right now, and as that is happening, is our psychic ability going to atrophy? And I would say, probably so, that if you don't use that psychic potential within you, you don't use that psychic intelligence because you are technologically hooked into, you know, a big brain or a hive mind or some kind of a neural connection larger than you, then probably that part of you will atrophy and you may lose it. And I guess my concern is, as a mother, as a grandmother, I feel like, you know, what's going to happen to this next generation as their very fragile, vulnerable minds are just being, you know, affected so dramatically by, you know, frequencies and images and ultimately implants.
Yeah, I should imagine. We all are, you know. We might not see it in our time, but I'm sure your children, grandchildren will do in the next time. And I'm sure, hopefully, we'll be all aware of it, that your children will be all aware of it when they get older, and their children will. Because of all these downloads, and hopefully, we'll all work together. You've done it.
So I think it's been a struggle on planet Earth for many eons about, I think the issue's been, what do we do with these humans? I think humans are incredibly creative. I think they're incredibly full of psychic ability. They have a multidimensional mind. They're not just data. They're more than data. And I think we're really at a very important crossroads today when we're making choices about who we're going to be.
How do you think this look at us? You know,
I'm sorry.
I know we've come a long way in science ourselves, and we've had help from them as well. But do they look at us as not superior? But do you think that we're learning a lot from them?
Oh, I think we're learning about ourselves from them. I think that's the lesson. I think, sure. I think that the whole history that's been recorded by a lot of just phenomenally outstanding ufologists, you know, have you know, given Colonel Corso, Richard Dolan, you know, they've really given us the whole history of back engineering and, you know, examining these craft that, you know, have come and maybe crashed or entered our atmosphere. There's a lot of information there that we have learned an immense amount from them. But what we haven't really looked at is what have we learned about ourselves in this? What have we learned about who we are as humans in this? We've gone into it more naturally, I think, because we have a scientific bent in our culture, a technology bent. We've kept the ET presence at arm's length. It's easier to talk about a UFO than it is an ET. It's easier to talk about some kind of propulsion or material that is that was back engineered as a craft material. It's easier to talk about maybe a computer system or, you know, or silicon chips or whatever than it is to talk about, you know, who have we discovered ourselves to be as humans in this interaction. And I think the only group that can really do that thoroughly is going to be the ET experiencers. And the ET experiencers who are coming forward are doing an absolutely splendid job of it. But for me, that's the question. The question is not technological. The question is not necessarily even scientific or psychological. The question really is, you know, what's the meaning of who we are as humans? What do we need to protect and preserve and nurture in who we are as humans because we are ET?
Yes, that's true. how exoconsciousness integrates with ufology and exopolitics?
Well, it's interesting. I'm here in D.C., and I sat through the 5 days of the citizens' hearing on disclosure that Steve Bassett did here at the nation's capital at the National Press Club, and I listened to all of the witnesses. I listened to the questions. I listened to the speeches. I don't think anyone said the word consciousness. I don't think anyone even broached the word consciousness in those 5 days. It was all about the witnesses and all of the researchers. They were all sourced in military, government, and intelligence information. So what happened in ufology over this 70 years that we've been, you know, actively doing ufology is that all of the information came from those three sources that we know about ET. So if you want to know about ET, almost all of the information came from government, military, and intelligence. And I think what happened over time, as is wont to happen over time, is you become your sources. In other words, you become the information that you gather. And I think that's happened to ufology. That's why in exopolitics today, the whole national security issue is the fulcrum of disclosure, because it is sourced in, you know, what the government, intelligence, and military is going to tell us. And I think that information is fine. I think that information is very important. But I also feel that it's not all of the information. The rest of the information resides, I believe, in ET experiencers, in consciousness, in formulating our identity as ETs, in relationships with ETs in terms of connecting and communicating with them. And to date, that information has not been brought forward.
Right.
I know you talked about your new book
coming out. Can you just give us a little bit of insight what you're going to write about in this new book?
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be, I'm calling it The Transhuman Meets the Exoconscious Human. And I'm going to be talking about looking at two worlds, two paths that we can take at this point. What's the history behind exoconsciousness in terms of ufology, exopolitics, and exoconsciousness? What's the history behind transhumanism? You know, what are the roots and what are the sources? And then I'm going to be looking at the three main areas I'm going to be dealing with is consciousness science, which is exoconsciousness, versus brain science, which is transhumanism. Transhumanism is brain science. So we can think of ourselves as a brain and only a brain, more like a computer brain with data, or we can think of ourselves as a consciousness who has lived experience, a consciousness that that has an interaction with a field of consciousness, that our consciousness is out in a field on this planet as we relate to people and the planet at large, as we relate multidimensionally to that whole field of psychic intelligence, of beings from other dimensions, of traveling to other dimensions. That's
yeah.
more of a consciousness science. The third section deals with genetics, and genetics, but in terms of what happens to the human body in transhumanism. You know, do we totally separate from our body? There was a teacher in India who came up with an idea to put an iPad or a tablet into a wall in his village where none of the children had access to cell phones pads or whatever, tablets. And so all of a sudden, these kids figured out how to work it. They figured out how to work, quote, the machine in the wall. And as an educator, he was so enthralled by this that to him, this meant that someday that the students really wouldn't need to have a body anymore. They would just be a data brain, a data set, and a data brain relating to other brains.
Right. And do you think do you think we'll be able to read other people's minds?
Well, I think that's a natural ability in exoconsciousness. I don't think that putting your data in a transhuman kind of artificial intelligence data bank is reading a mind. I think that's just reading a data set in a mind. I think telepathy involves a much deeper kind of ability to connect and communicate. I think telepathy involves lived experience. It involves meaning. It involves consciousness outside of the body, as well as very vitally within the body. I guess I feel like one of the things that consciousness can bring forward, that exoconsciousness can bring forward into human culture, is really the value of the human body as it is. It's not something that we need to discard, you know, quite the opposite. The human body is something that we need to, you know, treasure and cherish and nurture, because this human body embodies the way that we do communicate, that we do use our consciousness. It's not something that we just, you know, look at like, oh, you know, humans are just really not necessary anymore, that humans are just going to default to a machine or a robot's going to be much more important. I mean, that's another view of the body. That's the transhuman view of the body, that humans and the body really aren't that important. We're just going to replace them, and, you know, things will just be much more easily done without humans to mess them up.
Yes, that's true, yeah. And I think I'm sure it will happen in the future, Rebecca. I'm sure it will.
You mean transhumanism?
About then. Yes.
Oh, I think it is going to happen. And I think that there will be a segment. I think there will be a segment of the population that the population that wants to be a machine. They literally want to be, you know, part of an artificial intelligence machine. They want the information from the data bank. But I don't think, personally, that that's going to be everyone. I think probably going to end up being, I think we haven't really seen the whole story pan out in terms of artificial intelligence. People I talk to here in Washington, D.C., seem to feel that artificial intelligence isn't as far along as they think that they are, you know, acting like it is in terms of the propaganda that's put out in the press or whatever. But, you know, it's really actually data and a computer and artificial intelligence. I mean, it's really functioning at kind of a lower human level. It's rote memorization. It's data. It's kind of a lower level. The higher functioning abilities of humans, I think eventually humans are going to wake up to the fact that, wow, you know, I have something really important here, and I need to preserve it and I need to nurture it. But yes, I agree with you. There's going to be a segment of society. I'm sure people are going to try to make a lot of money off of artificial intelligence. I mean, the whole artificial intelligence community is out of the military. It's about, you know, super soldiers. It's about making humans weapons. It's about, you know, putting a man or woman on the battlefield that has all kinds of implants in them, so that there's, you know, a direct field correlation with them. I mean, this is very much, transhumanism is very much a military agenda. It came out of the military, and it's rooted in the military. And I think humans have yet to sort of wake up to that truth and that reality that, you know, do I want to be weaponized? Do I want to be a machine? I mean, those are hard questions. And some people will want to be weaponized.
Watching these futuristic films what come out, and some of the ideas what are on there will be fact.
You mean in terms of science fiction, kind of futuristic?
Well, some of the science fiction films what come out now, and some of the robots what are fighting, or maybe some of them will come fiction.
Oh, that they will become a reality?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I just got done reading that book, The Pentagon's Brain, all about DARPA, the Defense Military Science segment of our government. Absolutely. I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars flooding into military science, into military research via, you know, corporations and universities. I mean, billions of dollars. Absolutely. These futuristic ideas are going to come to pass. I have no idea. No doubt about that. And I also have no doubt about the fact that I don't think that humans are going to stay passive as we just are sort of defunct or defaulted by yeah. machines. I just don't think, I think that's unrealistic. You know, it's, I guess I feel like, now I'm talking as someone in the United States, that there has been just really an imbalance. Do I think that humans need some kind of protection and a military and whatever? Absolutely. I mean, realistically at this point in our development, yes. Do I feel that military science should dominate everyone's life? No. I mean, you know, that should be, in my opinion, of a very, very small segment of our economy, to be a very small segment of our culture. But today, it dominates our culture. But I think, as with, you know, any kind of culture that militarizes itself, sooner or later, it, you know, whether you're Rome or, you know, Alexander the Great or whoever you are, I think, you know, eventually you a militarized culture does not survive itself. It crumbles. And I think we need to be smarter than to just have such a limited vision of what, you know, our planetary culture could be. Our planetary culture does not need to be, you know, dominated by a military. It can certainly just be dominated by humans. It's our culture. It's our planet.
Of course it is, yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about these ET experimenting groups you run? You know, and what you talk about.
Well, one of the things I'm doing right now is I just founded for lack of a better word, I'm sure we're going to change the name, but right now we're just calling it the Mastermind Group, and it's an international mastermind group of people who are actually running different ET experiencer groups throughout the world. We have people in Hong Kong, China, Africa, Peru, the UK. There's a couple people from the UK, France, and we're then several people throughout the United States, but and Canada. But what we're trying to do is begin to talk as an international community of people who are advocating for and strengthening these extraterrestrial groups that are kind of a grassroots movement. We are a grassroots movement, and we're trying to support one another and strengthen one another and determine that given the reality that we're in now in terms of the political reality here in America and in other countries that have moved forward with disclosure much quicker than the United States. But how do we begin to be most impactful? How do we begin to tell our story to our cultures? And how can we kind of role model this for the people who are, you know, in our communities, in our countries? That's what I'm doing a lot of. One of the things that has happened that I've seen in terms of ET experiencer groups through my lifetime is that there was a time, it seemed like during the John Mack, the Bud Hopkins era, that there was a lot of kind of expert scientists, psychiatrists, that were kind of filtering the information that came forward about ET experiencers. But that's how it had to be at that time because they were literally the voice of the experiencer. So we found out about experiences by reading the psychiatrist John Mack's books, by reading the hypnotherapist Bud Hopkins' books, by reading the Professor David Jacobs' books. Then we went into a period where I really feel like after John Mack died, that experiencers got pushed to the side, that they were just, for want of a better word, they were just ignored. They were sidelined, and they were not really brought into the main dialogues of ufology and exopolitics. And
why
then
do
a few
you think
years
that was Rebecca?
Why I think
that was
that was
Rebecca?
I think that was a deliberate decision on the part of the people that ran MUFON, the people that ran the major UFO organizations. They wanted to be recognized by military, government, and intelligence people because they felt like this is the only way we're going to find out about ET, is we've got to get these people to talk to us. And so the last person that they wanted to be affiliated with was an ET experiencer, because an ET experiencer at that time was, you know, denoted as crazy or insane, or, you know, John Mack did that big study to try to, you know, tell people that ET experiencer was, weren't insane. But I think it was just a decision based on the ufology paradigm at the time. And unfortunately, I think it's had some consequences that we weren't really planning on being consequences. I'm sure everybody will be excited when Hillary or Donald Trump or whoever, Bernie Sanders, whoever's the next president of the United States, discloses the ET presence. But, you know, it'll be a very limited disclosure. It will be a very orchestrated disclosure. It will be a very small disclosure, quite frankly. But the real disclosure comes from ET experiencers. That's who the real disclosure comes from. So then I don't know if you know about the work of Ray Hernandez and Free and Dr. Edgar Mitchell.
No, but I will in future. I will look it up now.
Okay.
I worked
with Dr. Edgar Mitchell for about 5 years and his Zero Point Energy science team. That was really something that was very interesting to me. I learned a lot about science and Zero Point Energy science. And
Scalar energy.
Yeah, it's a similar kind of propulsion. There's similarities to it. We worked with a lot of new inventors that were bringing new kinds of propulsion systems forward. Honestly, it really didn't get very far. But when Edgar folded the Quantrec Zero Point Energy Group, he started working with a man named Ray Hernandez in Florida. And Ray Ray's done a real service, I think. He's gotten a group of scientists around him, and he's kind of gone back to the John Mack model, where he's kind of diagnosing and looking scientifically at what experiencers have to say, kind of, you know, more in a scientific expertise vein. Which I think is important. It gives people more information about what it means to be an ET experiencer. For exoconsciousness, for the Institute of Exoconsciousness, we're much more interested in, you know, while we are scientific and we have scientists in our midst, we're much more interested in a peer-to-peer, you know, a person-to-person, a peer-to-peer kind of open dialogue about what it means to be an ET experiencer without an overlay of diagnostics or statistics. So it's just a different approach. You know, we need all kinds of different approaches. That's just the approach that we're choosing to take at this point.
Yeah, that's so true as well. We've got about 6 minutes left, so it's soon gone. The hours so go so quickly sometimes. And you think, oh, God, are we touched on everything? And is there anything else you'd like to tell us before the time is up?
Well, I'm just glad to be here, glad to talk about, you know, my work. And I would love to involve your listeners in our work. We're a wonderful community. If there's someone out there in your audience that's running an ET experiencer group, please get in touch with me. I'd love to talk with you. I'm available.
That's a good idea as well,
So
can you let everybody know where they can get in touch with you?
Sure, you can contact me directly. My website, my information's on my website. It's just exoconsciousness.com. Or I have a blog. You can sign up for my blog. I'd love to have you join our blog community. My blog is also available on the website. It's just under my name, RebeccaHardcastleWright.com, but it's also available on the website. And just I'm also Facebook, Google Plus, Twitter, LinkedIn.
Twitter.
I do all of those. Yeah, I'm available for all of those. But if someone in your audience wants to contact me directly, they can email me directly from my website. I would really enjoy getting in touch with them about that. My book is available on Amazon, and maybe I can come and talk with you when I release this next book. That would be fun.
Yes, yeah, that'd be ideal. Yeah, just let us know when your book comes out, and just give me a date when just before it comes out, or when it comes out, and the week after, we'll talk about it.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Or
thank
week
you.
Before. When you just give us an idea sometime. Just leave me a message. Say, Bob, the book's coming out at so-so time, and I'll give you a date then.
That would be great. And if anyone's interested in the book that I wrote about exoconsciousness, it's on Amazon. It tells a lot more about a lot more about what my personal story is, what some experiences were that I went through, how I relate that to consciousness. There's exercises in the book that people can do. It's a really fun book to read. So, you know, I'd love to share that with them. It's available by paperback or on Kindle. And
yeah, that's so interesting. Do you know Mark Brinkerhoff?
I'm sorry, what's his last name?
Brinkerhoff.
I do not.
Mark. Oh, you? I would like you to get in touch with him, because Mark regular goes on Alien Crafts.
How do you spell his last name?
I can send it in a message on Facebook for you. It's
wonderful.
What I'll do, I'll send you details, and you get in touch with Mark. He's been on my show about 5 times now, talking about ETs, being in touch with them, being on the craft. And
oh, good.
And he lives in New York. Mark does live in New York, and he does have a group.
Oh, wow, I'd really love to meet him. That'd be great. Thank you.
That's fine. I thought you might be interested in Mark. He's absolute Mark and Phyllis Brinkerhoff. I will leave you a message about him.
Thank
and
you.
And where you can get in touch with him. He's on Facebook, and Mark will get back to you.
Wonderful. Well, it's been fun
anyway,
talking
you
with
have
you.
A
I appreciate
weekend.
It.
Weekend.
You also.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I will definitely have you on again, just before your book comes out, or after your book, or what.
Thanks,
whatever's
Bob.
Whatever's best for you, just let me know and leave me a message, and I'll have you back on again.
Thank you so much. You have a lovely day.
Thank you, and enjoy your weekend.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye.
Somewhere. Yeah.